Hey, this is Brandon McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into The Scoop. This is OwlScoop.com's weekly podcast. This is Season 6, Episode 11. I'm Sam Cohn. Alongside me today, as always, John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Sam Newman. We have a lot to get into between basketball news and football news and probably a million other things to talk about. Temple is playing a game this Saturday. They did play a game last Saturday, but we're going to get into all that. So how are you guys doing?
Doing well. A very stressful couple days.
Yeah. Doing the best I can, considering that I've had maybe like 2.5 hours of sleep plus like a nap.
What time did you go to bed last night?
I was going to go to bed, and then you were like, we were texting, and I was like, yeah, I might as well stay up. And then I didn't end up going to bed till like 3 o'clock.
So you didn't follow my advice. My advice was like specifically like go to bed.
After Kyle said, guys, just go to sleep for the third time, I was like, you know what? All right, I'm out. And I went to sleep.
And I did try and follow your advice. I made the attempt, and it just didn't happen.
Kyle read you a story, a bedtime story, and to sleep. I don't know.
A nice 1 a.m. I went to sleep at 1. It wasn't that bad. Got 6 hours of sleep.
I think I fell asleep around 1:30, woke up around 5, scrolled through Twitter, slept a couple more hours, and then got up again.
And the morning paper. That's what Twitter is now.
Yeah.
It's hard not to, but I've tried not to spend the last 24 hours just looking at a map. But anyway.
I'm just very zen. I've detached. You guys.
He went golfing this morning too. I mean, just
playing golf and not being on my phone, even though I missed a lot of big news in every facet of our lives. It was a nice way to unplug and not use my phone. But I did miss a lot. So things that I missed, for starters, Temple football starting running back Ray Davis has entered the transfer portal in addition to opting out of the 2020 season. Ray Davis had rushed for 936 yards, averaging 4.5 yards per carry, nine touchdowns last season as a freshman. This season, he's rushed for 308 yards and a touchdown. He's averaged 3.9 yards per carry. He also caught 12 passes for 62 yards through the first half of this season. A source familiar with the situation told us that Davis was suspended and his reaction to the suspension was to opt out and to go into the transfer portal. I don't know, guys, this is for a lot of fans, at least, this is pretty unexpected. So I'll turn over to you guys and just like first reactions of A, did you see how much did you see this coming? And B, what are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Did I think it would happen this week? No, I'm not breaking any news here when I say if you're a fan of the Temple program, I mean, this is what happens. If you follow him on social media, and it's just the world we live in. We got asked how many times last year, hey, what did Ray Davis mean by this on Twitter? What did Ray Davis mean by this on Instagram? It personally, and I mean, I know I'm throwing this disclaimer out there, guy's never been anything but nice and professional with me when I've interviewed him. He's a good interview, but he just, you know, kind of seemed to be blown by every breeze with the ups and downs of the season and then would kind of throw it out there on social media. Again, if you follow him on social media, and I think we even talked about it in our instant analysis piece, he retweeted a couple of things that implied that he wasn't getting the ball enough. I will say I reached out to Rod Carey for comment. Didn't hear back. Again, we talked to a separate source who said, and it's a source that I trust, that again, Ray was suspended, wasn't supposed to be a long-term suspension by any means, but he decided to enter the portal after that. So I don't think Rod's going to be speaking on the record the rest of the week. We'll speak on the record, of course, after the SMU game. I'm sure he'll get asked about it, but I'm not surprised, you know, and if there was indeed a suspension, and I don't have any reason to distrust that information, kind of just goes to show you. I mean, there's only so much a staff can put up with. And again, I don't think there was anything beyond that, but you can't have a different set of rules for one guy than you have for other guys. So I don't know, not surprised. Can't say I saw it coming this week, but given some of the history, I'm not totally surprised. I think it was kind of, you know, there were rumors floating around, legitimate rumors floating around last year as to whether or not he was going to come back. So can't say I'm shocked.
Yeah, I would echo almost all of that. I mean, I think it's a situation where if you're just a casual Temple fan from the outside, this is crazy to you because, hey, this guy's getting 20 carries a game and we thought he's the next Temple NFL running back and Gar Pierce and blah, blah. And if you're more into seeing how the sausage is made, there were signs of this coming for quite some time, as you just alluded to. I mean, he's always been pretty vocal on social media about when things aren't going well and pretty vocal about things on social media when things are going well. I think the optics of this are probably a lot worse than the actual product on the field or impact on the team, I would say. I think from a team perspective, there's a reason Tavon Rooley got a scholarship. I think he's a productive running back at this level. It gives you the opportunity to see, is Edward Sadie a running back this level, or is he going back to safety? Can Kyle Dobbins finally put it together? It kind of opens up the possibility to figure out what you have in that room, let alone the fact that you have a highly touted running back in Johnny Martin coming in next year. So the actual on-the-field product, I don't think is that much. Like, yeah, it sucks. Like, he's a good player. He's a productive player at this level. I think you can kind of weather that blow. It's the optics of this that really kind of hurts you. If I'm negatively recruiting Temple, I'm saying, look at their sophomore running back who was a freshman All-American. He's the one to leave. Why would you guys want to go there?
Yeah, just to echo your guys' sentiments, I feel like it's not really a surprise, just the timing. I feel like the writing was on the wall for a little bit, and, you know, it just seemed like if not now, then when kind of thing. I guess the timing just doesn't make sense since he already played 4 games and then decided to opt out of the season. But obviously, as we said, the source had told us that he was suspended and that was kind of the last straw. But I think Kyle brings up a great point that I mean, they're 1-3. You kind of have an evaluation period here to see. Tavon Rooley has already hinted that he wants to come back next year with extra year of eligibility. And then you have guys that you can look at. Dobbins, who hasn't really gotten a great look. Onassis Neely, even. So Neely hasn't – I don't think he's taken any carries. Edward Sadie as well. I think Sadie played a little bit at the end of the game. There's Tulane. But it gives you a look at some of the younger guys, and we'll see if the production drops. But Tavon really has been more efficient than him this year. That's just a fact of the matter. And I know Carey was not pleased with the way that Ray Davis has been running the ball. He feels like that he's been trying to hit home runs too much in the beginning of the year. I feel like he rushed better. There's USF, but – and – no, he rushed better. There's Memphis, but it just wasn't there.
Yeah, as Kyle said, if this were a situation where there was no history of, you know, him kind of doing, I mean, I'll just say it, like the passive aggressive thing where he was doing a lot of stuff on social media. Again, I talked to a couple of sources last year or last offseason. This had been discussed before. You know, this had been discussed with the coaching staff before. This was not a situation where the coaching staff just ignored it and said, oh, that's just Ray being Ray or whatever. They talked, and there was some back and forth. So this was not a new thing. So again, as it's been explained to me, their desire was not to kick him off the team, but it was to, and again, I don't know specifically if it was tied to retweeting that stuff, you know, who knows. But you know, if he just was willing to opt out in the middle of the season again. Now, we should note, Sam, you reached out to him, haven't heard back yet. You know, if we do hear back from Ray, we'll of course get you something. I wouldn't expect Rod to say much more on Saturday other than, you know, we've covered these things. We know how things go. I don't think Rod's going to smoke him on the way out the door. We'll probably say, I'm going to do whatever I can to help him. Again, I think whether or not Rod Carey ever wins another football game at Temple, I think the guy's pretty fair and pretty straightforward, about as straightforward as he can be with the media. I you know, even when Quincy Roche left, he was pretty honest. He was like, hey, I'm like the jilted ex-girlfriend here. We wanted him to come back. You know, he's a really good football player, but we wish him well. We want guys that want to be here. I think he always shoots pretty straight. So, you know, I don't expect him to, you know, rip the guy to shreds on Saturday. But again, I don't expect Rod to speak on the record about it. But if this were a situation where we had never seen anything like this, I agree with Kyle in saying, oh, wow, the optics of it would look bad. Not trying to downgrade his production, but, you know, if you want guys that want to be here, now you can see what you have with Rule AC. You know, Kyle Dobbins is the intriguing guy to me. We haven't asked Rod about him in a few weeks. The talent's there. We'll see. But again, it's, I don't expect them to play like three or four backs now, but now we'll see who's next man up beyond Sadie, if it's Neely or Dobbins or someone like that.
Look, and I'll just say it's been 5 years since they've had a productive Kyle in the program. So if Kyle Dobbins can all of a sudden take that role and go from there, it's better for all involved.
Who was the other
Kyle's guy? Kyle's friend.
Oh, you love that. That was
good news. Good news is we have a productive Kyle in this program.
But yeah, productive is a very, very loosely used word.
We have a Kyle in this program. So as you guys have mentioned, this kind of puts Temple in an interesting spot with kind of what comes next. And we did get a chance to hear from Tavon Rooley earlier this week during media availability. Tavon now becomes the team's number one running back with Ray Davis's departure. Rooley rushed for 102 yards on 21 carries. He's averaged 4.9 yards per carry. He does have a season long run of 30 yards. And the identity of the backfield changes now a little bit in that he's a bigger one cut runner. So now it'll be interesting to see what chances Edward Sadie gets and if guys like Onassis Neely or Kyle Dobbins get a shot. So we're going to play some audio from Tavon Rooley from earlier this week.
Every day at practice, we go over point of attacks and how coach tells us to be decisive. And because what our problem is right now in the running back room is we second guess a lot. So like in the game and stuff like that, we'll have a run play, a zone run play, and like we're missing a hole because we're not decisive. So I say the first four games, it was more so us being like indecisive. Like in the backfield, I speak for myself and like also Raymond. But we go over every day in practice, and coaches always tell us like to be decisive in your decisions that you make, the holes you make, you see all about your vision and everything. So I feel like going along, we're going to get better at that because we like make it a big point at practice now. Like we focus on that more. So I feel like we're going to be like start to be more decisive and execute.
All right, so yeah, you just heard from Tavon Rooley. He was kind of dissecting, you know, what he believes hasn't gone right in Temple's run game this season. You know, I feel like he mentioned some, brought up some good points. Feel like they're trying to do too much. Obviously, you know, you would like the play of the offensive line to be a little bit better, because I feel like while they've kept Russo clean for most of the year and the other quarterbacks, you know, the run blocking just hasn't been there. So I think Rooley said it all comes down to execution. I mean, that's coach speak right there, player speak. Yeah, that obviously it does. But it's interesting to hear him break down all that just from his perspective.
That, and to hear him keep going back to that term of being like indecisive and having trouble in the entire running back room of indecisiveness. And he said that's something they harp on so much in practice lately. And he does think that that's a thing that can improve because they've started harping on it more. But just to hear him talk about feeling like all the guys in the running back room, him, Ray Davis, and beyond, are just indecisive, and that's why they're not able to get things going because the game just moves at such a fast pace.
You also get Adam Klein back this – well, I guess he said the Klein's pretty much coming back this week, right?
Yeah, he pretty much said that. It just, I think he practiced on Monday, and they said they wanted to see like how he responded to that. But it, I mean, he looks like he should be a go for this Saturday.
Yeah, kind of in a similar vein with that. One of the things that this might be me bright siding, which I get accused of doing occasionally. One of the things that might be a positive that comes out of such a terrible, terrible performance against Tulane is there was a quote from Rod Carey on Monday where he said, "Well, Griff Sestili smells blood in the water. He's having a hell of practices because he thinks there's a chance for him to play over CJ Perez." I don't think that will actually happen. I think CJ Perez will start, but I think it presents opportunities for the incumbents to not feel complacent that they just have these jobs. So you would hope that kind of breeds competition and maybe you do get a better offensive line performance going for now, like you said, the new number one running back, Tavon Rooley.
And staying on the topic of the offensive line, from what John asked Rod on Monday, it sounded like they might be a little banged up there and not have a lot of depth because you have guys who are hurt like Klein, but then also at the same time, it sounded like some are in quarantine as well. I don't know which players that are, but it seems like they're a little thin there. So, I mean, Griff Sestili stepping up is probably big when they don't have a lot of depth there right now.
Although I agree with Kyle, I'd be kind of shocked if Griff Sestili starts at center. I think that unless Griff Sestili has really made a major turnaround, I think he's depth more than anything else. I think he could spell CJ Perez, but I think CJ Perez is the better player there. And I think Rod was pretty honest with that, where he said, you know, like Kyle said, Griff smells blood in the water, but I think his exact words were something like, I think CJ, I'm pretty confident he'll bounce back and get that corrected. But Yeah, he was, you know, his stance, as you guys know, coming off the game was, yeah, we were shorthanded. Yeah, we were batter, but we were just bad. No, there wasn't a whole lot to say about that. He really didn't make any excuses.
Another section of that offense that we can get into and dealing with breeding competition and dealing with injuries is the quarterback. And that's because Anthony Russo will be missing his second straight game due to an injury in his AC joint in his right throwing shoulder. So Rod Carey did say on Monday that he expects to roll out the same plan with Trad Beattie starting, taking the first drive. Rial Mitchell will see some snaps coming shortly after. And the hope in Rod Carey's mind is that one of those guys gets hot, one of those guys plays a little bit better than the other, and then he can stick with them the rest of the game. That is not something we saw last week against Tulane. Neither of them got hot. Trad Beattie helped put 3 points on the board for Temple on the first drive, and then offensively Temple didn't do anything for the rest of the game. So the hope, at least for Rod Carey, is that they turn that around and one of them plays better. So we did hear from Trad Beattie and Rial Mitchell earlier this week. So we're going to play some audio from Trad, and he did mention a little bit about how he isn't feeling too much pressure in terms of having to go back and forth with Rial, or feeling like he has to make something happen on every drive. But instead, it is what it is, and they're just going to do what they can to help the team win. So here's some audio from Trad Beattie from earlier this week.
I wouldn't necessarily say so, and you know, I think a lot of people will understand it from that perspective. But for me personally, I try not to look at it that way. You know, I just want to go out there and do the best I can for my teammates and do what I can to try and help us get a win.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting, because what I kind of keep coming back to is when they talk about they're hoping one quarterback gets hot, whether that's Trad Beattie or Rial Mitchell, is what happens if Trad Beattie starts the game and they go and score a touchdown? Is that getting hot? Is that enough to kind of keep him in there? You keep playing that hand until he fails, or do you go to Rial Mitchell because that's what you had scripted? They would probably go to Rial Mitchell because that's what they scripted. But Trad Beattie's going to get the first whack at this. He's the guy that probably runs the more conventional version of the offense instead of more read option-y that they were doing with Rial Mitchell. And he's going to get an opportunity to kind of prove his worth against an SMU defense that is probably a little better than Tulane's was. And I mean, it's definitely better than Temple's is at this point. I mean, I had the opportunity to exchange questions with the Hill Topics, which is a great site name, the Hill Topics. And they kind of talked about the defense so far with SMU has been the old cliche of bend and don't break. They've given up a lot of yards, but they've had some situations where they've made some crucial stops, and that's why they're 6-1. That being said, they've been on a little bit of a streak of giving up a significant amount of points. I mean, defensively, there's opportunities here for Trad to kind of bounce back against Tulane. I think in the end, Temple's weapons are still strong enough to put up some points against SMU. A lot of that just ends up being execution, whether it's from the offensive line or from the defensive line, from the offensive line or the quarterback position. Red zone wise, this is a middle of the pack defense. They're 60th in the nation. Total defense wise, they're 62nd in the nation. They're just a very middle of the pack team, which I know when you put that in kind of perspective with the conference, you go, okay, well, they're the third or fourth best defense in the American. Because nobody in the American plays defense outside of like Cincinnati and Temple when Temple's good. It's kind of just like a little bit of like a vanilla Big 12 conference in that aspect. So I think it'll be, we talked about this during our instant reaction, I think the only chance they have of winning this game or winning any game is just a shootout. And that's going to ultimately fall on Trad or Real's shoulders.
And we don't see that happening, do we?
A win or them like actually being more productive on offense?
I don't know, either one. I can't even see him getting into, I don't mean to jump ahead to predictions, but I don't even see him being able to get into a competitive shootout with them. Now, Trad made a couple of throws last week where you'd say, okay, that was there. And they just, whether it was execution, whether it was play calling, they either got away from it or maybe some of those plays were called and he just didn't execute them. But, you know, there were a couple of throws you'd say, okay, maybe he's got a shot here, but to keep up with this offense again, we know what Reggie Roberson did to Temple last year. He's been out with a season ending injury, TJ McDaniel's out, and they're still, you know, right. They're still putting up points. They're still a prolific offense. And I just, I think you have to make a couple of plays on, like get some sort of turnover and maybe, and again, this is a stretch. We're stretching here. And we say this, maybe Ramon Davis leaving shakes things up a little bit. Maybe a guy like Rui gets going on the ground and they keep feeding it to him and feeding it to him. Maybe he's a little bit more decisive running. I think it would have to be a situation like that. Otherwise, I can't see them keeping up in a shootout.
Yeah, I mean, we're not into predictions yet, but I I've said this almost every week at this point. I'm not impressed by the Sesame's defense. Every game except for Stephen Austin, so an FCS opponent, they've given up at least 380 yards of offense. They're giving up their almost 38 points a game over their last three games. They can get got. Like, you can put up points against SMU. I think the real issue might be that Temple's depleted defense is going up against a bit of a buzzsaw. Yes, Rhett Lashley went to Miami, but Sonny Dykes is still there. They still run a modified version of the air raid. They put up a lot of points. I feel like they've been churning out wide receivers at SMU for like 15 years, going all the way back to Cortland Sutton. It's like every other year they have some 1,600 yard receiver that just, you could, Jesus Christ, the guy's going to be a second round pick and probably end up with the Broncos. And they have a sneaky NFL quarterback prospect. Like, Shane Bruchel has a chance to be the fourth or fifth quarterback taken in this draft if he decides to declare. He's a little smaller. I mean, he's what, 6'1", 6'2", I think, but he can absolutely sling it. I mean, he was productive at Texas. I feel like people think that he failed at Texas. No, he was productive at Texas and just happened to get beat out eventually. And then transferred 40 minutes away. But I guess, Sam's, what do you guys see of SMU?
Yeah, I mean, just going off your guys' points, it's hard to see Temple being able to – obviously, we're not making predictions yet, but it's hard to see them getting into that shootout. But obviously, I mean, you can look at – I mean, SMU has a similar defense to last year. They returned some guys there. And Temple was able to go punch for punch with them. It was just a matter of the receivers hanging on to the football, which they did not, obviously. Russo played one of his better games. I don't know if that – you know, bodes well for Trout or Real, but they have to get into some rhythm offensively. What I'm worried about is the defensive side of the ball and them just not having, you know, the stamina or the speed to keep up with SMU's high-powered offense. I mean, I feel like that'll be pretty telling early on whether they're going to be able to make it a game, but I feel like there's a good chance that SMU is going to be able to blow them out of the water just because of where they are as a team and where SMU is at. I mean, SMU has also played, what, 7 games already this year? Right. So they are like, you know, they're seen in the midseason form. I mean, Temple is technically in midseason because they've already played 4 games, but they don't look like a team that's in midseason form. So we'll obviously make predictions later, but this, you know, this matches up as well as you would help if you are SMU and Sonny Dykes.
Can I say something really quick?
And
this is, you're going to kill me because this is not really worth the interruption. I just love her. Like, we're obviously not at the point where we want to make predictions just yet. Like, it's like, holding off. It's not your birthday yet.
I have not yet called the SMU game for Temple. There's still data coming in.
Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
I was going to say the same thing that all three of you said. I'm not making a prediction yet, but, and then we'll go on to say whatever you're going to say. But
you can't make a prediction.
So I'm not going to make a prediction yet. But the only thing of substance that I would add to what you guys are saying, and these are obviously two very different – what I'm about to say is between two very different teams, but the narrative seems similar to what we talked about leading up to the Temple-Memphis game, where it seems like their only chance to win is to get into a shootout and outshoot the other team. Granted, SMU's defense is better than Memphis, but is better than Memphis's, but I don't see a way where this Temple team compared to the Temple team that couldn't beat Memphis in a shootout can beat SMU in a shootout. I just think it's tough to imagine that week two of this rotating quarterback, the rotating quarterbacks, and, you know, not having your starting running back along with not having guys in the COVID because of the COVID protocol and on top of injuries. I think it's a more depleted team, and it's tough to imagine this team being able to hang with a really strong SMU team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. If they were a bit healthy and if they were playing better, which are two of the biggest obvious, you know, ifs here, you know, I might say, okay, they're playing better. Maybe they look at last year. You look at that game last year down in Dallas. That was kind of a turning point in Temple season, and not in a good way. They didn't play well defensively. That was a not so great game for the secondary, particularly Harrison Hand. And they were never really the same after that game. And I think if they were playing a little bit better, they were healthier, you might say, okay, maybe there's a little extra juice heading into this game, even though you don't really have fans in the stands. You might say maybe that gives them a little bit of an edge, but there are just too many other factors here, I think, for that to be a play here.
And now the moment you've all been waiting for, predictions. Anybody want to go first?
I'm kind of the score that jumped into my head here is like something like 42-17. I think you see a little bit of an improvement with Trad. You know, you maybe see a little bit of a bump with Rooley. I do think that there's some reason to believe there if Klein comes back, and Rooley's the type of back that you can keep giving the ball to. Not that you couldn't with Ray, but maybe you hold him at bay a little bit. But you know what? I'll go 35-17 instead of 42. Not either way, does it really matter? But I just think you'll see a little bit more out of Trad, but it's going to be hard for them to keep up. Anything I say beyond that is just going to be wasted energy.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that, like, I mean, I'm not going off a limb here saying that I feel like this is a game that Temple just bodes that they don't really have a chance being in it. After halftime, to me, it looks like that UCF game last year where they're able to keep it a game until halftime. And then they just get, you know, the second half comes and SMU turns it on. Do I think Temple's going to lose 63-21? No, but I mean, granted the way that SMU is operating and what Temple's defense looks like, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I'll go maybe lower here. I'll say 42-21.
Real quick, I want to comment on John said, "What? Who cares if it's 35-17 as opposed to 42-17? Vegas cares. They're 18.5-point underdogs, so that would be a significant development. I actually was going to go with 42-17, but I'll change it up a little bit. I think the issue with this is going to end up being Shane Buechele and their running back, Ulysses Bentley, a dynamic running back, 10 touchdowns already. I think that Temple's defense is still pretty beat up. Yes, they might get Yvandy Rigby back this week. They're probably not going to get Kobe Wilson. It sounds like he's going to be cleared from the COVID protocol later this week, but yeah, if he has legs underneath him, you're all of a sudden going to throw him out there and play him 60 snaps a game. I think the defense isn't going to be able to hold up with SMU. I'll say in the end that this is 42-21. I think Temple will score a couple touchdowns. You might get one late. I mean, even without how bad the Tulane game was, and it was, they still schemed up some situations where if Trad makes the dump off screen to Jaden Blue instead of overthrowing or underthrowing him, then that's an easy touchdown. I think there's still going to be a couple plays like that where Trad's a little calmer. He's another week into being a Division I starting quarterback, and that maybe he is able to put some points up on the board. But yeah, ultimately Temple loses this one pretty handily.
And as bad as the defense ended up being in last week, they still were able to force 3 turnovers. I feel like they can. The way they stay in this game is doing that, but obviously, you know, that's easier said than done. And SMU is not a team that turns over the ball that much. So, yeah, but I mean, they were still in it by maybe midway through the third quarter before the floodgates open up. I feel like that's what's gonna happen again.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning they had 3 forced turnovers and 2 3 and outs, and then they gave up 5 straight touchdowns. So, like, I think they played as well as they could until, yeah, like you said, the dam just broke. There was too many holes for them to stick fingers in.
For my prediction, I'm going to go with SMU 35, Temple 13. Sam and Kyle, you both gave Temple 3 touchdowns. John, you gave him 2. My question for you guys is if Temple scores either 2 or 3 touchdowns, which quarterback is the one that punches it in?
So do you mean, like, the actual scores a touchdown or just leads the drive? Like, who's going to be the more productive quarterback?
Yeah, who's going to be the more productive quarterback?
I don't think that the game plan was particularly well constructed for when you had Real Mitchell in there. I feel like they didn't give him an opportunity to kind of run an actual conventional offense and then, like, buy time with his legs or make improvised plays with his legs. I think that's where he would excel. I think if they put him in a situation like that where you're actually utilizing your wide receivers and then occasionally he's running instead of these designed quarterback keepers or a read option, then he has a chance. If they don't, I'm not super optimistic they're going to at this point. I'm more kind of comfortable with Trad Betty running Temple's conventional offense than I am with Real Mitchell styling on people right now.
Absolutely. And I feel like the thing is, I feel like we'd like to see Mitchell there in the red zone, just because that one drive we're in the red zone. I mean, it was the same stuff that we've seen before, a run that didn't work. A fade route that didn't work, and then a design quarterback run. You just have to be better than that. And they're not going to, you're not going to beat SMU settling for field goals.
So Sam Newman, you had a chance to talk to George Reed this week. Do you want to give a little insight into your conversation with him and kind of what you got out of that?
Yeah. So George Reed has obviously stepped in for Isaiah Graham Mobley. And I feel like he's done a decent enough job considering, you know, the current constraints and circumstances and the fact of the matter that he, you know, used to be a safety as a linebacker. We kind of talked in my conversation with him, which will be hopefully on the site later. We talked about his transition from safety to linebacker and how those conversations with the coaching staff, how he was kind of hesitant at first, but leaned on some of those guys who are in the NFL and IGM and Audley Isaacs to help him with that transition. He bulked up, which isn't unnatural to him. I mean, he had to do the same thing at Abington High School. So he went from 155 to like 185, and now he gained 15 more pounds. I don't know how much he weighs now, but he bulked up. And, you know, just from when we spoke with, I mean, not even talking with him, but when we spoke with guys like Will Quimku and Amir Tyler on Tuesday, they said they were really like proud of the way that he's like been able to step up and the way that he's played. Obviously, you know, I think there's room for improvement for everybody on the defensive side of the ball. But I think if you're Temple, you have to be happy to what George Reed has given you in the fact that IGM was supposed to be that team leader, keeping that defense together and being able to kind of replace that what you had in the middle there with Sean Bradley and Shaquille Russell, not necessarily replicate it, but replace it. And just going back to George Reed, obviously, you know, that USF game was huge for him. He was able to redeem himself after that 15-yard penalty, and talking with him, he said he was kind of nervous. And that's why he got the penalty. He ended up redeeming himself, picked up a fumble. He had a sack. I think he had two tackles for loss. He combined with Amir Tyler to snuff out that potential game tying 2-point conversion and then a recover that ensuing onside kick. And now we'll just cue up some audio about, you know, about George talking about what it was like for him in that USF game and how surreal of experience it was for him.
Yeah, it was really surreal. It just really helped my confidence as a player because I haven't touched the field since I was really in high school. So that really just like gave me the confidence to like, oh, I can still do this. Nothing has really fell off since then.
All right, so you just heard about George Reed talking about his experience playing the USF, which was not his first career start, but really his first time playing. I believe his first career start came the next week. And he said it was his first time really playing since high school. So then we kind of went through his – with him, he kind of took me through his 4 years at Temple, where he's ended up originally recruited by Matt Rhule's staff. Jeff Collins sealed the deal. But it was under Rod Carey's staff where he made that transition to linebacker. And he just – you'll hear from him in a second just talking about, you know, what he's learned from his 4 years down in North Philadelphia. So here's George Reed talking about that.
Just understanding the playbook and understanding, like, everybody has a job to do and realizing that you can't do something – you can't basically try to make somebody else's play. And just understanding, like, you have to do your job.
So, again, hopefully by the time you're hearing this, Sam's story on George Reed will be up on the site. If you're listening to this podcast, you have to go listen to it. You have to go read Sam's story on the site. Switching over to the basketball side of things, unless anybody else has anything they want to add.
Wait, are we going to do, like, an audiobook feature on our stories now? Just one book.
I said it's an audiobook and I was muted.
So switching over to the basketball side of things, the big news that came out of today is Wednesday, if you're listening to this Wednesday, or yesterday, if you're listening to it on a Thursday, the big news to come out of Temple basketball is that Jaleel White, their true freshman from the class of 2020, had a meniscus injury. It was the same left knee that he had injured back in 2019. He did have a successful surgery on that knee earlier in the week. He could potentially be out anywhere from 2 to maybe 3 months, so it will be interesting to see if he plays, considering it is an eligibility free year. But Aaron McKee is obviously going to be more cautious with injuries, A, because he's a true freshman, and B, because due to COVID, it is technically an eligibility free year.
Sam, I wanted to ask you, what do you think that happens at point guard right now? Just, I mean, you're more knowledgeable than I am when it comes to this, but, you know, without Ty, are you looking? We feel like Jeremiah is going to probably take the keys to there, and then might even see Damian Dunn. I don't know. It creates a big problem. I mean, who's going to be handling the ball? start off.
I think Aaron's really close to putting on shorts and a jersey himself and just going out there and taking over a point guard. But yes, no, you're right. That does add a lot of questions to the mix of what do they do at point guard. Because as of right now, we still don't totally know for certain whether or not Ty Strickland will be ready for opening day, which presumably as far as right now would be the tournament just after Thanksgiving, November, like 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, around there, like that weekend. So we're unsure. It's unclear if he'll be ready for opening day. So as of right now, without Ty and without Julia White for opening day, you're looking at Jeremiah Williams as probably your starting point guard. Beyond that, I would say Damian Dunn is probably the next guy you'd put the ball in his hands. But again, that backcourt is looking pretty thin. If as of right now, Caleb Battle doesn't have his waiver. So that backcourt gets pretty thin. If you don't have Jaleel ready, if you don't have Caleb ready, if you don't have Ty ready, then Jeremiah Williams is likely the guy you're going to look to. But beyond that, Damian Dunn is probably the next guy you put the ball in his hands. But again, it's pretty thin in that backcourt as of right now.
Yeah, I don't know who else it would be. And again, Jeremiah Williams could turn into a pretty good player for all we know. I mean, Temple's obviously hoping that they got him at the right time. He was getting a lot of MAC interest, a couple other Big Ten programs that kind of sniffed around and not offered him. And you do hope that he turns out to be that tough Chicago type of player from Simeon that they're hoping for. But I don't think it's ideal. And this really isn't a knock on Jeremiah Williams, but think of what they're dealing with here. You know, JP Moorman had said there, you can't build any chemistry over Zoom. These guys essentially met each other for the first time all in person on August 1st. It's a lot to ask of Jeremiah Williams, but you know, they might have to, and we don't know. At the last we had talked to, but there hasn't been any media availability since the beginning of the, at least a few weeks, right? Last time we talked
about two or three weeks. Yeah.
So we don't have an update on Ty Strickland. The next step was whether he's going to get into the contact portion of practice, but yeah, it's a lot to ask. In an ideal situation, you would hope that, you know, that a guy like Jeremiah could learn for a year under Ty, you know, obviously play a few minutes here and there. And then, you know, you'd see what would happen with obviously with Fabe coming in from New Magrety, but I don't know. This is going to be tough for them. And again, hopefully we'll get the chance to speak to Aaron McKee sooner rather than later and find out what's going on, who is, you know, bringing the ball up the floor and stuff. But I can't imagine it'd be anyone else other than Jeremiah Williams at this point.
As of right now, Temple's roster has six players listed as guards on its roster. Jeremiah Williams, who should be, as far as we know, will definitely be ready and is healthy and is ready to go for game one. Quincy Adamakoya, who generally plays the wing, not a guy that will have the ball in his hands or be a ball dominant point guard or anything, but is a guard, can play off the ball, should be ready to go for game one. After that, Ty Strickland, potentially not ready. Jaleel White, likely not ready. Damian Dunn, you would hope will be ready. And Caleb Battle, if he doesn't get his transfer waiver, then will not be ready. So that's half the guards on your roster that won't be ready for opening day and potentially could not be ready for a significant portion of the season. And only two of those three guys could be ball dominant guards. And that's Jeremiah Williams and Damian Dunn. Now, granted, do you look to Quincy Adamakoya to be a guy with the ball in his hands? If that's the position you're in, probably not, but you're forced a certain hand when that backcourt is thin. But the way I see it now is Jeremiah Williams is likely the guy you're going to put the ball in his hands. And then beyond that, if you need someone, if he needs a blow, then you give it to Damian Dunn.
Yeah, and I think after that, if some catastrophic event happens, then you're forced to go past that. I agree that you probably don't want to put Quincy in that situation just because I don't think as a true freshman you can expect him to necessarily create his own shot. I think it's better if he's more, if you're more just driving and dishing to him. I think if Damian Dunn's in foul trouble and Ty Strickland's not available and Jeremiah Williams is whatever, dinged up for the day, I think you might go Dre, to be honest. I think Dre might have to end up playing with the ball a little bit in his hand, which is not an ideal situation. I'm not saying they're going to revolutionize offense doing this, but I think that might be the third option.
Yeah, I'm laughing just thinking about. Go ahead, John.
No, I mean, what do you do in that situation? Is it just like trying to, not that you can do this anytime you want, but is it just like getting out in transition, like a whoever brings the ball up the floor? Well, this isn't unheard of in basketball. Whoever brings the ball up the floor, it's like get up the floor, dribble, hand off to somebody, and then just try to set your offense up from there. You know, there are a lot of teams that don't have traditional point guards, but they're really stuck here.
at that point, the goal is to play as little half-court offense as you can. The goal is to just get out and run and get guys up the floor and push the ball, push the pace as much as you can, because the worst thing you can do is end up with, as Kyle had mentioned, if Dre Perry is the best ball handler on your floor and he's the one bringing the ball up the court, you end up with a position where the defense is going to pressure you and is going to send double teams by the time you get to half court. They're going to, you know, as Napier, we'd say 94 feet of defense. They're gonna pressure you off the inbound. They're going to trap you at half court. And that's going to put Temple in some really tough positions, whether that be a guy like Dre Perry, or even whether I would guess right now, a more likely situation maybe to be Quincy Adam-Okoye, just because he's probably more used to having the ball in his hands. But as Kyle mentioned, he's a true freshman, not easy to put him in that position. So I think right now the hope is that you don't end up with that.
In that situation, it's 2008, 2009 Sixers, come run with us, was their slogan. Well, who ends up being coached by who? Who was the coach at the end of that year?
2008, 2009, Tony DeLeo.
Tony DeLeo. His son was playing at Temple, and he was the head coach of the Sixers.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. I think I was in fourth grade. Okay, so to the mailbag. We thank you all for sending in submissions to the mailbag. We do have a handful to go through. So first question from our message boards is from Temple J. Any word on Strickland or transfers? That's Ty Strickland or incoming transfers. So as we just mentioned, Ty Strickland, we have no official word. His likely return would be either just a little before the start of the season or a little bit into the start of the season. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I don't expect him to miss a huge chunk of the season just because the surgery was nothing major and the surgery was successful and it's nothing season ending. So I think the hope is that he's ready by at least a little bit into the season.
And yeah, I mean, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, but my guess would be just from a managing an injury aspect that maybe you don't plan on playing him at Mohegan Sun and you kind of hope that maybe you get him back around the time the conference play starts. That would just be kind of how I would guess, but you never know.
And conference play is expected to start, is that January?
God, get a Resco on the phone. They haven't released anything yet. I mean, if you're expecting 26, 27 games, which is what I keep hearing is what they're hoping for, they're kind of hurt by the fact that the tournament they're playing in is only two games instead of three. So it'll probably be 26. I would think that that's probably end of December or if not January, because they are playing 20 games this year. So they're playing two more AAC games. So you might see that in December instead of January.
And then the other game that we do know of is they're playing at Villanova on December 3rd. I guess a Thursday night or something. So yeah, Kyle, I agree with you that the hope is maybe by conference play you can get Ty Strickland back. As for transfers, we do not have any official word on Caleb Battle or Sage Tolbert getting their transfers, getting their waivers cleared.
Sorry to cut you off, Sam. We should note that we're not even sure if they are pursuing a waiver for Sage Tolbert to play immediately. I have reason to believe they do. Last time, again, we had media availability. I asked Aaron McKee about Caleb Battle's situation. I think he literally just said nothing yet. That was it. With Sage, I think he said it's a possibility. We're looking into it, but I don't know if they have actually pursued that. So again, something we'll have to find out the next time we get a chance to talk to Aaron McKee.
Next question from our message boards is from Joe D49. Any insight into why Ramon Davis is transferring? This offense is anemic and probably the worst Temple offense I've seen in 30 years. Wonder if he doesn't get along with the coaching staff.
Kyle
and I want to climb all over this. Yeah.
Unbelievable recency bias on that one. That this is the worst Temple offense you've seen in 30 years. Jesus Christ. Do you just forget like an entire 10-year span of Temple football? Like, John, how bad was Temple offenses in like Al Golden's first year?
I think it was Golden's first year. They played at Penn State. I think they crossed midfield like once. They were playing with guards that were 250 pounds. Like,
My wife always tells the story about how you can tell how Temple football has progressed because as a student in the crowd, that the chant used to be that people would get hyped for when they got first downs. Like the move the chain chant was like, oh, look at that. We got lost 70-0 to Bowling Green, but we've got two first downs. Like this is nowhere close to the worst Temple offense of all time.
No, not at all. We talked about why Ray Davis is transferring again. We have not talked to him individually, have not talked to Rod Carey individually. But again, we mentioned earlier in the podcast that he was suspended. Don't believe it was going to be a long-term thing. And then his response to that was, I'm hitting the transfer portal. Again, agree to disagree on the worst Temple offense I've seen in 30 years. That no, statistically.
They were they were last in the nation in 2005. Then they were like 10th from last, and then they went back to second to last in 2007. They were historically bad.
Yeah.
To give some credit here, if you want to make the argument that that Tulane performance was the worst, was one of the worst offensive performances you've seen in 20, 30 years, sure, it's probably up there. It's probably in the top 20. I always think back to Jeff Collins putting up 70 yards against South Florida as the worst Temple offense performance I've seen. But as far as the season altogether, the offense was fairly productive before Tulane. And then they lost their third-year starting quarterback, and the offensive line didn't show up, and you got what you got.
Yeah, again, I get it. Like, I we're not trying to be sarcastic here and saying that anybody should be happy with
trying to be a little sarcastic.
Well, yeah, but like, again, 38-3, bad performance. But I think I mentioned before, one of the cool things about Al was when he first got to Temple, there were a couple of occasions where he said, come on in, I want to show you how close we are to breaking things here. And this is when they were really, really, again, if you're a longtime Temple fan, you know just how much Al Golden had to take over, and they were just hoping to out-recruit UMass and Villanova and programs like that. And there were a couple of times where I got to sit and watch some film with them, and you would see the trajectory of how a play could break, and then you would just see the reason it didn't, because somebody just got absolutely blocked out of their socks. And so there's a lot of stuff to sift into to say it's the worst performance in 30 years. But again, I feel the fan frustration there. I understand where people are coming from. When if he doesn't get along with the coaching staff, I mean, I would assume that's part of it if he's going to leave. Again, Sam had reached out to him. We'll see if we get a chance to talk to him. But other than that, I think we have that one covered.
The next question on our message boards comes from Owl Worldwide. Taquan Woodley hinted at a top five coming soon. Any word on if we are supposed to make it and who else is in the mix?
Kyle, what do you think here? I think it's plausible to think so, but we have not talked to him yet and don't have a super good read on this just yet. But
right. Here's my read to both of those questions, both parts of this question. Is first off, I think it's possible that they're in the top five. His relationship with Icier is real. They have a good relationship. I think he's interested in Temple. I think it's important to keep in mind that as of right now, Temple does not have a scholarship for him. Like, yes, they could move on from Brandon Sanders and all that, but as of right now, they have taken the commitment of Brandon Sanders and they do not have an extra scholarship for him. And there's also the potential, if not probability, that guys like Dre Perry and JP Moorman are going to come back next year, which you're probably getting a one-year extension of the scholarship limit for all the seniors that come back, but you still have to kind of balance, do you want to bring in another four-year commitment? Ultimately, I think they will be interested in Woodley. As far as other teams that are interested, Virginia Tech, I hear, is interested. I heard South Carolina got involved a little bit. It's like we talked about last week, you re-enter the recruiting scene as a bigger guy, you're going to get some bigger interest than you had initially. So I think if Temple does manage to get Woodley, which is far, 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 far from a certainty, they will have stolen him from some pretty big names.
Last couple questions here, again, come from the message board. These are from D Thomas 96. Going out on a limb here, in parentheticals, maybe not. Question one, how much longer do you think Carey has at Temple before he gets axed? I know there may be more clarity after we hire an AD and a president. What's everyone's season end record predictions? Mine is 2-6.
I'll take that first part. I think I'll give them the excuse first and then kind of wrap it up. I think in a year where Temple doesn't exactly bring a lot of revenue athletically to begin with, but that was completely destroyed by COVID. You're, like they said, they're bringing a new athletic director. They're hiring a new president. I think if you think that in a year like that Temple is going to decide to buy out the remaining 4 years of a sitting football coach that won 8 games last year, then yeah, no, it's just not a possibility. If they buy Carey out within the next 2 years, I'd be shocked. I don't think he's anywhere close to the chopping block. As far as what's everyone's – the other part of that is even if their revenues weren't depleted, Temple just does not fire people after 2 years. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, Bobby Wallace was here for 8 years despite never succeeding. I just think with an athletic department that operates in such a shoestring budget that they would never make that move. I think the only way that Rod Carey leaves is if he decides to leave, which I don't think will happen. My season-ending prediction would be 2-6 as well. I think they beat East Carolina.
Yeah, I think they're a 2-6 team as well. And Kyle pretty much nailed it there. And I'll go a step further, and people probably aren't going to want to hear this, but the guy deserves a little bit more time. I mean, it's, they won 8 games last year. Yes. Could they have been a 10 win team last year? Did they screw up on special teams? Was the Cincy game winnable? Yes. But this, you know, again, they've got some stuff that has not gone well. I mean, that, like, again, even if you're depleted, last week was bad. You don't lose 38-3 to Tulane like that. But it's just kind of been a crap sandwich of a season to begin with. Yes, a lot of teams are dealing with it, but Anthony Russo's been out. They are depleted. Now, I think if they come out of this season and they've got pieces, and, you know, if Anthony Russo is back next season, and, you know, a couple of guys do decide to come back, like Randall Jones, Brandon Mack, and if you got a good roster and some of the same things persist and they're like a 3-4 win team, then I think you've got a legitimate gripe to say, okay, was he the right hire? But again, we got to see how this goes. It's not like he was a complete abject failure in his first season. You can give me all you want about, oh, those are other teams, those are other coaches, players. Everybody deals with that. Every first year coach, you know, second year coach, you're going to deal with that. But I think the guy deserves a little bit more time. I get it. I wouldn't expect any fan to be happy with what they're seeing right now, but for that reason, and obviously everything Kyle outlined, it's just not realistic. I get the fans are upset, but I think it's way too premature to say he's going to get the axe. Just not realistic.
Yeah. Just going off what you said, John, I don't think fans are going to like to hear this, but if AD and president are going to be evaluating this season, I don't think they're going to be really looking at this season as an evaluation period. I think you start looking at next year and see what his recruiting class does. And if, you know, they win 4 or 5 games next year and don't go to a bowl game under 500. Yeah. That's when you start having that conversation. Is this guy the right guy for the job? But I think it's way too early just because we have to see what his recruiting class can do at this point. And Temple fans are going to have to be patient. I mean, on it, you could kind of compare it to, you know, what's happening with McKee a little bit, just as this season is kind of, you throw it out the window, whatever happens. Not that that's the greatest analogy, considering Temple didn't make the tournament last year in basketball and the football team went 8-5 in the football game. But at the same time, it still holds a little bit of merit that you have to give a head coach some time to bring in his own guys. And I think you Carey at least gets 3, 4, 5, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I think the recruiting part's a good point. The position group that we always talk about is that the offensive line was depleted by the time he got in here, and they kind of had to patch together grad transfers and JUCO guys as they're trying to figure out, develop depth there. But I'm going to be really curious nationwide, FBS-wide, if there's that much coaching carousel movement this year. Like, I can't imagine that almost any coach outside of, like, yeah, if Alabama went 2-10 somehow and you're like, holy crap, like, we were expecting a national championship, or they only played like 9 games or whatever, but that might be a situation. But otherwise, like, revenue down, everyone's kind of graded on a curve with this, with the fact that COVID completely decimates your team at a drop of a dime. So I don't think you'll see the normal turnover anywhere that you normally do.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan, do you honestly believe that Temple's administration will go to Rod Carey and say, listen, I know you barely got to practice at full capacity all through August. How do you go to him and say, yeah, you're done after this season? It's just implausible. And again, I think the other thing, and maybe this is a good thing that fans expect this, you talk to some people, and I've talked to some reporters about this, just some fans and friends from the outside looking in. The general vibe when people look at Temple football is they say, you know what, kind of have to hand it to Temple's administration, because from the Al Golden hire, say what you want about Addazio, they didn't, you know, he had the 4-7 season in his second year when they were back in the Big East for a year. They haven't had any missteps. And you could argue that all of those hires were good hires. Al Golden to Steve Addazio to Matt Rhule to Jeff Collins and now to Rod Carey. You know, that's a lot of pressure to keep things going. You know, at other programs with bigger budgets, oh, we can have them all again. We'll just go get this guy. We'll get a offensive coordinator that we can pay $1.5 million a year. Let's go. Temple doesn't always have that option, certainly for those types of assistant salaries. You might have a season like this and you might have to fight through it again. If we're talking about some of these same issues next year, a couple years down the line, then I think he's a little bit of a hot seat, but I still think he's more inclined to coach out the rest of his contract. But everything they've been through this year, it ain't happening. Then the other question is, what, any update on the athletic director, present hiring timeline, who the targets are at this point? The university has recently sent out a survey to alumni to gain feedback. The only thing we know is that the, you know, in terms of a president, the university has talked about, and you know, the Temple News, Temple student newspaper has covered this, and I'm sure the Inquirer has too. There's a search firm for the next president. We've been told in terms of the AD search, again, you heard Vinny when we talked to him last week, Vinny James, nothing super new there for the athletic director search. You know, some people tell you that they think that the new president will hire the new athletic director. Some people tell you that they don't think that's going to be the case. I don't know in today's higher education world with everything that's going on with COVID. Sure, UCLA hired a new AD, Boston College hired its new AD in Pat Kraft. That obviously got the chain of events going on with getting Pat up there, but don't know much beyond that. I think the president search is ahead of the AD search, certainly.
So I want to say thank you again all for sending in questions to our mailbag. You know, every week, more than welcome questions for each podcast. And guys, anything else you want to add before we wrap up here?
Take care of each other.
Any parting words of wisdom?
We'll go get some sleep. Probably not, but let's get some sleep.
We hope all of you listening will stay sane, A, through the election, B, for Temple's game on Saturday against SMU.
Which Sam Cohn will be there covering.
Which I will be at Lincoln Financial Field covering. I'm very excited to go. So thank you all for listening. We appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of your day.